but also build ourselves up and each other in holy faith. Jude 1 verse 20. As we study the lives of these men and women of old, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, and others, we readily see many gaps in this record, in the Scriptures. It may leave us with questions. You know, why didn't God answer this or that we may want to know the answer to? But again, God gave us what He wanted and what we need. Romans 15 verse 4, the things that were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the Scriptures might have hope. God gave us sufficient information for what we need. The tool that God used for us is enough. Romans 15 verse 4. God, and like Abraham said in Genesis 18 verse 25, basically, the judge of all the earth will do right. That's one thing we've got to remember. The judge of all the earth will do right. Let's have that firmly established in our minds. Well, what about so-and-so? What's God going to do with them? The judge of all the earth will do right. No one's going to escape the judgment of God. We all, whether it's from Adam to the last man on earth, are going to stand before God in judgment and give account of the deeds done in the body. Romans 2 verse 6. But let's remember also, number two, that the secret things belong to God. Well, what about that? You know, I'm interested in this. I'm inquisitive of this. God didn't answer this or that. Well, what about the secret things belonging to God? But the things that are revealed, that sufficient information that God gave us to build our faith, to give us hope, that information, the things that are revealed are ours. So we see God's commentary. We do see God's commentary and His mindset with some like Cain. We know what God thought about Cain. The world in Noah's day, we know what God thought about them, about Sodom and Gomorrah. They stand as an example of God's judgment. And in our study today with Ur and Onan, Judah's sons, and how that God slew them. God slew them for their wickedness. But why don't we see His commentary at other times, like with Abraham or Jacob or Rebekah or whatever? Why don't we see that commentary? You know, I don't know. But the judge of all the earth is going to do right. No one's going to escape. And the things that are revealed are ours. I'd just like to encourage us never to allow the gaps in our understanding to cause us to miss the things that are revealed. The things that are revealed are ours. We have sufficient information to build our faith and to build us up in holy faith and to give us comfort and hope by what is written. Don't ever let our questions keep us from and cause us to miss what is written. And along that line, I'm reminded again of Lot. You know, I don't know why, and I fell into it. I don't know why Lot said what he said to the men of Sodom, but I do know God's mindset about Lot, that righteous man, that just man, his righteous soul, and he was godly. And just like God can deliver him, no matter what I get myself into, no matter what you get yourself into, God knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations. There's a way of escape, and He's going to deliver us. Don't miss that. And number three, I want us to remember that at least in measure, and in keeping with the context of Acts 17, verse 30, there were times of ignorance. God winked at. Judge of all the earth is going to do right. No one's going to escape His view. But what we need to remember is God commands all men everywhere to repent. You and I are bound by the law of God, and God will handle those of old. God will handle our questions. The secret things are His. The things that are revealed are ours. Let's make sure that we are growing in faith and that we turn from every lawless deed and that we live so that we can truly be called the seed of Abraham, Galatians chapter 3. You know, if we obey the gospel by faith, we're the children of God, we're the seed of Abraham. And let's be encouraged by that. These people that we're looking at, the lives of Abraham and others, they're examples for us so that we can live soberly, righteously, and godly in this world, just like they did in theirs. When God looked back in commentary on their lives, He said, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and those others, they died in faith. We can die in faith, and that's what we want to do. We've sinned, yet in living by faith, God's grace, God will be gracious to us Just like when they lived by faith, God was gracious to them. They are our examples. And this, just a quick snapshot on this map that I have on the screen of Jacob's travels in the land of Canaan. We see him traveling, and you'll see this line on the page there, traveling from Succoth to Mamre. Just as an overview of our study this evening, we'll be looking at Genesis 33 through chapter 38. We'll take chapter 37 out, and we'll look at it on Sunday. So we'll keep the continuity of the story of Joseph. But we'll look at 33 through 38 this evening. Jacob is in the land of Canaan, and he builds an altar to his God, the God of Israel. He's in the land of Canaan, and this prince of the land named Shechem, he defiles Jacob's daughter, Dinah, and Simeon and Levi, his sons, seek vengeance against him, and as Jacob later on describes, they were instruments of cruelty. Jacob journeys toward Bethel, and a very sad event in Jacob's life is his beloved wife Rachel dies. Genesis chapter 36 documents the generations of Esau, who is Edom, the father of the Edomites. And in chapter 38, we see an event in the life of Judah and Tamar. And through Judah and Tamar's lineage comes the Christ. So let's begin as an overview of our study. On Sunday, we'll begin our study in the life of Joseph in chapter 37 and chapter 39. In chapter 33, at the end of chapter 33, it tells us in verse 18 that Jacob came to Shalem, a city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padan Aram and pitched his tent before the city, and he bought a parcel of field where he spread his tent, and at the hand of the children of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money, and he erected there an altar and called it Elohi Israel, the God of Israel. In chapter 34, here again we see a prince of the land named Shechem. He takes Jacob's daughter Dinah, defiles her, and we'll see here that his sons Simeon and Levi are instruments of cruelty, and they destroy Shechem and his city. Well, Shechem defiles Dinah. He takes her, he defiles her, but he wants to marry her. We see that in the first few verses. Jacob hears about what Shechem did to Dinah. As far as we know from the record, he does nothing. But Shechem and his father Hamor meet with Jacob's sons, and they are offering a dowry to have her as a wife. And in chapter 34, verse 8, Hamor communed with them, saying, "The soul of my son Shechem longeth for your daughter. I pray you give him to wife, and make you marriages with us, and give your daughters unto us, and take our daughters unto you, and you shall dwell with us, and the land shall be before you. Dwell and trade you therein, and get you possessions therein." And Shechem said unto her father and unto her brethren, "Let me find grace in your eyes, and what you shall say unto me, I'll give you anything you want. Just give me Dinah as a wife. Ask me never so much dowry and gift, and I will give according to as you say unto me. Give me the damsel to wife." Jacob's sons answer deceitfully. Let me clear my screen of something. Jacob's sons answer deceitfully and counter Shechem and Hamor's offer, and so that they act as if, well, yeah, we can become one people. Every one of you men just need to be circumcised, and you can have what you want. In verses 15 to 17, "But in this we will consent unto you, if you will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then we will give you our daughters unto you, and we'll take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and you will be one people. But if you will not hearken to be circumcised, then we will take our daughter, and we'll be gone." And so they were answering, as he says here, answering deceitfully. Well, the men of Shechem City agree to the arrangement. And they go back to their people, and they convince their people, well, you know, if we do this, then their property will be ours and they can intermarry with us. In verse 21, verse 23, they say, "These men are peaceable with us. Therefore let them dwell in the land and trade therein, for the land, behold, is large enough for them. Let us take their daughters to us for wives, and let us give them our daughters." And then verse 23, "Shall not their cattle and their substance and every beast of theirs be ours? Only let us consent with them, unto them, and they will dwell with us." So they bought the counteroffer, and they go back and they say, and they do that. Well, Simeon and Levi wait for a period of time, wait for several days, and then they go and they attack the city, and they destroy the people, they take Dinah back, and then they spoil the city. In verses 30 and 31, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have troubled me to make me to stink among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites, and I being few in number, and they shall gather themselves together against me and slay me, and I shall be destroyed, I and my house." And they said, "Should he deal with our sister as with a harlot?" As we'll see in the next chapter, well, the people of the land were afraid of Jacob. And so they didn't pursue them. They didn't attack them. But Jacob was worried about that. "You've made me to stink in the eyes of the people of the land." So Jacob rebukes them. And then later on in chapter 49, as he is giving the blessing to his sons, over in chapter 49, verses 5 through 7, and this is in the land of Egypt. Let me turn over there just a moment and read a couple of verses. In verse 5, "Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dig down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob, and scatter them in Israel." So here we see the blessing of sorts toward these two, Simeon and Levi. In chapter 35, before we go into that chapter, any comments or questions on our study so far? About the overview or about these last couple of chapters. In chapter 35, God charges Jacob to go to Bethel, to dwell there, to build an altar. Remember the place where Jacob was? This was at one time where he had a stone for his pillow and he dreamed and he saw the ladder and the angels of God descending and ascending. Well, God tells him to go to Bethel and build an altar there. And Jacob charges his household to put away their gods and to wash. And, of course, the people of the land, we see here in verse 5, that they're afraid of Jacob. They don't pursue them on his way to Bethel. Well, Jacob comes to Bethel, where God once appeared to him, and he builds there the altar. And in verses 9 through 13, we see in this section, Rebekah's nurse dies. Verse 9 through 13. "And God appeared to Jacob again, and he came out of Padan Aram, and blessed him. And God said unto him, Thy name is Jacob, thy name shall not be called any more Jacob, but Israel shall be thy name. And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply, a nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I give Abraham and Isaac, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land. And Jacob went up from him in the place where he talked with him." So God gives him the promises that he once gave to Abraham and Isaac, and he's going to give him the land and make him a great nation. In verses 16 through 20, Rachel dies on the way to Ephrath as she gives birth to Benjamin. In verse 16, "And they journeyed from Bethel, and there was but a little way to come to Ephrath. And Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. And it came to pass, when she was in hard labor, that the midwife said unto her, Fear not, for thou shalt have this son also. And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. And Rachel died and was buried in the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. So Jacob journeys and dwells in the land beyond the Tower of Edar. And the Bible shows us here that Reuben takes one of his father's concubines and defiles her. And from the record that we see, Jacob says nothing about that. In verse 21, at least at this point in time, he will later on, again in Genesis chapter 49, when he gives the blessing to his sons, he'll take care of it then. But at this point in time, he does not. And it came to pass that when Israel dwelt in the land, that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard it. Now the sons of Jacob were 12. And so here we see the sons of Leah and Rachel, the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. And in verse 27 through 29, Jacob came unto Isaac his father, and to Mamre, and to the city of Arba, which is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac sojourned. And the days of Isaac were 180 years, 180 years, and Isaac gave up the ghost and died, and was gathered unto his people, being old and full of days, and his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Over in Genesis chapter 49, there's a couple of passages I want to look at here in Genesis 49 and also in 1 Chronicles chapter 5. Genesis chapter 49, in verse 3, Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, and excellency and dignity, and the excellency of power, unstable as water, thou shalt not excel, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, and defilest thou it. He went up to my couch. So here Reuben receives this blessing. In 1 Chronicles chapter 5, and 1 Chronicles chapter 5, the first couple of verses, let me turn over to that. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the sons of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. For Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler. So from Judah came the Christ, of course, but the birthright was Joseph's. The sons, I say, of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, were, and he goes on to show that. So Reuben defiled his father's concubine, and so the birthright was given to Joseph. Any comments or questions on Genesis 34 or 35? In Genesis chapter 36, we see described here the generations of Esau, who is Edom. In the first part of chapter 36, it gives us the names of the three wives of Esau. Tells us now these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Ada, the daughter of Elon, the Hittite, and Aholibamah, the daughter of Ana, the daughter of Zibeon, the Hittite, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter. And in verses 6 through 9, here we see again the note that Esau is Edom. He's the father of the Edomites. In verse 6, and Esau took his wives and his sons and his daughters and all the persons of his house and his cattle and all his beast and all his substance which he got in the land of Canaan, and he went into the country from the face of his brother Jacob. For their riches were more than they might dwell together, and the land wherein they were strangers would not bear them because of their cattle. And thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites, in Mount Seir. In chapter 38, Judah marries a Canaanite named Shua, and she bears him three sons. In Genesis chapter 38, in the first few verses, it came to pass at that time that Judah went down from his brethren and turned into a certain Adullamite whose name was Hira. And Judah saw there a daughter of a certain Canaanite whose name was Shua, and he took her and went in unto her. So he married her, the point being, and she conceived and bare a son and called his name Ur. And she conceived again and bare a son, and she called his name Onan. And she yet again conceived and bare a son and called his name Shelah. And he was at Kezeb when she bare him. So we have the three sons of Judah. And God destroys or slays Ur and Onan for their wickedness. In verse 7 beginning, and Ur, Judah's firstborn, was wicked in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord slew him. And Judah said unto Onan, go in unto thy brother's wife and marry her, and raise up seed to thy brother. Here we see the what we might describe as the Levirate law, the idea of raising up children to your brother's spouse. And we see that also later on in Moses' law in Deuteronomy chapter 25, and also again in the book of Matthew when the Sadducees come to Jesus. And of course, the Sadducees do not believe in the resurrection. They don't believe in spirits. And they're trying to trip Jesus up. And they give him a concept of this woman that had seven husbands. And they all had her to wife. And, you know, in the resurrection, whose will she be? Whose wife will she be? Well, so here's the idea of a brother marrying his brother's wife, the wife of his brother who died, and raising up children to her. So Judah says to Onan, go and to marry your brother's wife. And Onan knew that the seed would not be his. And it came to pass when he went into his brother's wife that he spilled it on the ground, lest he should give seed to his brother. And the thing which he did displeased the Lord, wherefore he slew him also. Then said Judah to Tamar, his daughter-in-law, remain a widow in thy father's house till Shelah, my son, be grown. For he said, lest peradventure he die also as his brethren did. So there was something, some reservation in Judah's mind. Well, the first two boys died. I don't want Shelah to die. And so he promises Shelah to Tamar, but there's some reservation in there, and he does not want him to die also. And Tamar went and dwelled in her father's house. Well, Judah's wife dies, and he goes to Timnath to shear his sheep, and Tamar finds out about that, and so she's got a plan. You know, she realizes that Judah had not given Shelah to her to raise up children to her brother's name, and so she has a plan to remedy that. In verse 12, in the process of time, the daughter of Shua, Judah's wife, died, and Judah was comforted. Or after she died, and he was bereaved and comforted, he went up unto his sheep shearers to Timnath, he and his friend Hira the Adullamite, and it was told Tamar, saying, behold, thy father-in-law goes up to Timnath to shear his sheep. And she put her widow's garments off from her and wrapped herself and sat in the open place, which is by the way in Timnath. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot, because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, go to, I pray thee, let me come unto thee. For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, what will you give me, that you may come in unto me? And he said, I'll send thee a kid from the flock. And she said, what will you give me as a pledge till I send it? So I'll give you this kid of the flock. Well, what are you going to give me, Judah? Well, I'll give you my signet, my staff, and my bracelet that she asked of him. So he gave it to her, verse 18, and came in unto her, and she conceived by him. And she arose and went her way, and laid by her veil from her, and put on the garments of her widowhood. And Judah sent a kid by the hand of his friend the Adullamite to receive the pledge from the woman's hand, but he did not find her. And he asked the men of that place, saying, where is this harlot that was openly by the wayside? And they said, there's no harlot in this place. And so he returned to Judah and said, I can't find her. And also the men of the place said, there's no harlot in this place. And Judah said, let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and thou hast not found her. Well, after 3 months, she was found to be with child, and then Judah pronounces judgment against her, calls for her to be burned, but she produces his guilt. She shows him the things that he had given her, and then Judah acknowledges his guilt before them. Verse 24, and it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told Judah, saying, Tamar, thy daughter-in-law, hath played the harlot. And also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth, and let her be burnt. When she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child. And she said, discern, I pray thee, whose these are, the signet, the bracelet, and the staff. And Judah acknowledged them and said, She's been more righteous than I, because that I gave not Shelah to her, Shelah, my son, and he knew her not anymore. Well, Tamar bears twins, Phares and Zerah, and there was a struggle for one to come out, but then one comes out before the other, and it is through him that the Christ comes, through Phares. In verse 26 and verse 27, and it came to pass in the time of her travail, that behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed, that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And it came to pass as he drew back his hand, that behold, his brother came out. And she said, how hast thou broken forth? This breach be upon thee. Zerah came out, his hand came out, but then Phares broke through and came out first. She called his name Phares, and afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah. So Phares and Tamar are documented in the lineage of Jesus, in Matthew chapter 1, in the first few verses. Over in Matthew chapter 1, in verse 1, the book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac. Isaac begat Jacob. Jacob begat Judas and his brethren. And Judas begat Phares and Zerah of Tamar. And Phares begat Esrom. And Esrom begat Aram, and so on until we see the Christ. Any comments or questions in our study? In summary and application, you know, we see God's working in this world. God's well able to accomplish His will. And He uses people and things and events to His good as He's bringing about, as we've seen, bringing about the Christ through the lineage of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now through Judah and Phares. God can use us, use people and things. But we don't simply want God to use us. We want God to use us for good. We want to be a vessel of good, and we want to be blessed in this. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 20, let me turn over and read a couple of passages. In 2 Timothy chapter 2, in verse 20, but in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and earth, some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified and meet for the Master's use, and prepared unto every good work. So we want God to use us, but we want God to use us for good. We don't want to be a vessel to dishonor, but be a vessel to honor. In James chapter 1, verse 25, whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deeds. So we want God to use us, but we want to be blessed in that. So we want to be righteous like Abel was, as we see in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 12. Righteous Abel. We want to be righteous like Lot was, 2 Peter chapter 2. And faithful like Abraham. We want to live and die in faith, as the patriarchs did. Comments or questions? Well, on Sunday, we'll study chapters 37 and 39 and begin our study in the life of Joseph.